This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
Well, when I opened for Louis years ago, he would always be like, man, I would kill to be where you are, like just running around Brooklyn, earning laughs, because he gets a lot of laughs based on being Louis, you know? So he's like, I would kill to get that genuine response again, just to know if it's actually funny. Kill to be where you are. Cut to 2 years later, he gets popped, and I text him. I was like, hey, welcome back to my level, and he never wrote back. So I think he was, I went too far there, but it was still raw. I should have given it like a month.
Hot breath. Yeah. How's that look? Is that
all right? Should I get closer?
Maybe a little in the middle of the couch? Now we're like on late night.
Oh, yeah.
This
panel.
Is the new late night right now.
There we go.
You made it to panel. Congratulations.
Yeah. It feels like I banged you and we're having like an interview after where we're like, now what do we do now? Do we tell everybody? Do we keep it a secret?
Well, I felt like that when we were doing, I was like, well, what food do you want? And then I was like, I'm here. I parked. What room? It felt like it was a whole like setup here.
Yeah, like a one night stand. Oh, yeah. Wow. Look at that.
This is some water for you.
Ooh.
We have our own water now since we last did this, too.
Wow. Hot breath. I've had that in the morning.
Yeah, that's all for you, man.
Oh, well, thanks. Jeez, you got your own water. You got your own office now. This is great.
I don't even know where to begin just because I'm excited to get you back on here after 2 years.
And has it been 2 years?
It's been almost 2 years to the date, yeah.
And I haven't progressed.
You haven't progressed?
Well, I'm still in the same hotel room.
It's a nice hotel.
There's
way worse hotels out on the road.
This is the W, Midtown Atlanta.
Yeah. Here watching, working the Laughing Skull all weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So let's welcome them. Hot Breathiverse, welcome to this Hot Breathisode. Today's guest really needs no introduction. The last time he was on here, back in Hot Breathisode number 84, we talked all about just his rough start where he was a janitor, sleeping on trains, getting robbed, all in his pursuit of comedy. And now we are going to interview him about his recent successes. And this guy right here is just a comedian who is just focused on being funny, not worrying about what other people are thinking besides the voices in your head.
Sure,
of course.
Sure.
But just always just doing the work, I think, is a big message of this episode and this comedian. So a prime example of what you can get out of just focusing on being funny consistently. So that being said.
Well said. Here, here.
Mark Norman, welcome to the Hot Breathiverse.
Good to be here in my hotel room. Thanks for coming up. And you brought snacks. So
I brought snacks.
Give a big thanks for the snacks. Underrated. Yeah. Goes a long way. People, I brought you some flowers or whatever. Mm. Snacks.
Yeah.
We just want to eat.
That's what a thing I made with this podcast. Before we had our own water, it was I would just bring people like water that I printed labels on, like,
sure,
just myself, just because like you just want to add a little something for the guest, make them remember you
oh
know?
Yeah,
but I didn't even know what you ate. You're kind of like low-key in shape now.
Wow.
Like, I mean, people look at Mark like, ugh, and then you're like, oh, he's like, you're like working out. Like, what's going on here, Mark?
Well, I cut back on the sauce. I was a real booze bag.
Uh-huh.
And then I was just rotten fruit, you know, I was just doughy. So I said, I'll go to the gym once a week, and that's it.
You just go once a week?
I just go once a week. I used to box. I got really into boxing for a while, but my trainer guy fell off. We'll get to that later. But and I was like, I don't want to meet a new guy and all that, so I just gave up on the boxing thing. But now I just do little dumb tricks. You know, when you're on the subway, I just lift my feet off the ground. It's like a little OCD thing that gets the abs going.
Yeah.
There's always time to do. I do weird squats in the morning. I do what I call bed jumps. You know, I'm in hotel rooms so often that I'll just jump from the floor to the bed 30 times, which doesn't sound that crazy, but it really gets the core burning.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you got to get those knees up. So give it a whirl if you ever get feeling chunky.
And what are the squats? What are the squats you do?
I have zero thigh. I have no thigh meat. It's just femur. And is that femur? Is this the femur?
I think this is your femur.
Yeah,
right?
it's just femur. And so I just go up and down, you know, like. And I do that 50 times, and that burns. and you squeeze your butt on the way up. I've seen all these things. I saw this on YouTube, and I just stole it. But I'm in a hotel room so much that I have to do prison workout kind of shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you act like you're not doing anything, and then you just rattled off like four things.
Oh, I guess you're right. But those only take like 3 minutes each. So I'm in and out, I'm done in half an hour.
You do that, you said once a week, but is it daily?
No, I do that every day. You and then the gym, I go once a week.
Oh, okay. So you're doing something.
I'm doing so. I just feel such guilt about the food I eat. I still drink a lot of whiskey and bourbon. So I got to do something. And, you know, I'm watching my friends. I got friends who are hitting their 40s, and they're slowly dying.
Yeah.
So I'm scared of that. I'm 35 now, so I got to get cooking.
Yeah, that's why I'm 31. And, like, I'm at the tipping point where it's like, all right, you can't just get away with anything anymore. It starts to kind of, you know, karma will hit you.
It hits you. It's a bitch. Like, I used to just drink 100 beers. Not 100, but, you know, I just drink a bunch of beers all night. I would just drink. And now I'm like, oh, that beer is this many calories. It's like, I hate it. I'm that guy, but you got to worry.
But have you seen an uptick in your professional success as your health has taken
I think
an
so, yeah.
I've noticed that too.
Yeah,
personally.
I mean, look at like John Mulaney, Dan Soder, Joe List, all these guys who got sober and just took off.
Yeah.
So I like booze too much to quit. So I just said, all right, I'm just going to tamp it down a little bit and not just black out four nights a week. But I'll still get drunk. I just won't black out. So I have my little, what do you call it, compromises.
Okay. You'll still drink, but you have the self-control to not.
Yeah, I mean, I had three whiskeys last night.
And on a Thursday.
On a Thursday, and lived it up, and then you just brought chicken fingers. I'm eating that. So, I'm still living, goddammit, but I feel like so many people in this business, comedy is fun. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
There's booze, and there's laughs, and there's, you know, friends, and everybody's hanging out in green room, and the free meal, and the horrible racist jokes. It's a good time, but, like, no one's having fun now. No one. Everybody's sober. Everybody's starting families and all that. And all that's great. And I get it. But I feel like it's not as fun as it used to be.
Comedy?
Well, it used to be. Mm-hmm. I'm talking. I love comedy. I still love doing stand-up. But it used to be blowing rails and groupies and, you know, this and that. And now comedy's very, like, I don't know. It's very, it's tamer.
It's like a professional.
It's professional.
You mean it's like a workplace.
Well, because before you didn't have to do the social media cum guzzling shit all day with the, I got my story. Here's the ticket link. Here's me on a tour. I'm fat. I'm gay. Here we go. All day long. Branding. You know, you didn't have to do that before. Before you just wrote jokes, told jokes, party. And now it's like, you know, got to get on Facebook, got to promote. Got to tag this, got to do things with friends, got to start a podcast. It's so much. Got to have a web series. You know, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a job.
It's a job now.
It's a job, Mark.
I know. It sucks. It used to not be a job.
But look at the impact comedy's having now as well.
Like, that's true.
It's booming now.
Booming.
So you got to give some sort of credit there.
You're right. Everything has a give and a take. You know, like comedy's bigger than it's ever been. But it's also kind of censored again a little bit. Mm. I mean, you can still do what you want, but, you know, it's weird now. The thing that kills me is I don't mind the people getting offended and all that. They're allowed to be offended. But to me, it's the other comics coming after comics. That really stung.
Yeah. When you hear, were you talking about like Louis C.K.'s incident?
Well, that's a whole other bag of hammers. But, like, I'm just saying, like, a comic says this, and then another comic be like, hey, that's inappropriate.
Oh,
you're like,
yeah.
What are you doing? Come on.
Yeah, I'm into the belief that, like, comedy is a language that, like, comedians can speak.
Yeah.
And, like, we just have a rapport that I feel like outside of comedy, people just don't have a context for.
Right.
So like, anytime a comedian says something, I'm not like, oh, how dare you? I'm like, oh, they're a comedian just trying to talk the language. You know?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, how many comics have said horrible things about, like, men or whatever, and then she comes off stage and you're like, hey, what's up? Because you're in the green room now. You're back to reality. These are all jokes, but I have a theory, and sorry, tell me if I'm talking too much.
Dude, this is your show, Mark.
All right, I just had a cup of coffee.
You.
I'm gay. So
that's your ultimate out. You always just say, I'm gay.
Yeah, yeah, which is funny, because whenever gay guys get, you know, gay guys, you always hear about them getting beat up for being gay. I've always gotten out of fights by saying I'm gay.
Hmm.
You know, like, hey, did you just touch my girlfriend's ass? I'm like, I'm gay. And they're like, oh, all right. Thought I was going to have to beat your ass for a minute. So,
your theory.
What was my point?
We were talking about comedians offending, and you had a theory.
Oh, I got it back. All right. Thank you. So, I think everything is so phony now. Like, the news, everything is fake on the news. You know, every quote, every platitude, big is beautiful, but then you still go to the gym. So you're like, which one is it? You know? So everything is all just like feelings based and got to be nice and all that. So I think comedy, the whole point of comedy, the whole funny thing about it is it's true. Mm-hmm. You know, you go, oh, it's funny because it's true, or that's so relatable. I feel the same way. So comedy is like the last place you can tell the truth. You can't tell the truth on the news now. The news is gone. The news is, journalism is horrific. So, like, now they're going to come after it because they're like, damn it. We've kind of, these people are like, hey, we've stifled everything. We've stomped everything out true-wise. But comedy, they're still doing it. So I think people are, A, going towards it, which is why it's so popular, and B, coming after it angrily because it's true. So a lot of it is true.
Yeah. So. Do you see a solution or a resolve?
I think you just got to keep doing it. Because we used to go, oh, my God, I'm sorry. Let me retract my statement. Now just go. Just don't apologize. Just keep going. And I'm not saying say horrible things. You know, if you're some alt-right weirdo, get out of here. You know, if you're some white guy who's just like, why can't I say the N-word? You're like, all right, you're bad news. But, like, if you're just being funny and it's a good point, that's comedy. Get over it.
I think the key point there is funny.
Yes.
It has to be funny.
Yes, exactly. And that goes on all fronts. If you're gonna shit on Trump, go nuts. But it's gotta be funny. Don't just go, he sucks, and everybody claps. That's not, rape is bad, racism is evil. Yeah, yeah, no shit. That's easy. That's agreeance. That's not stand up. That's not comedy.
It's spoken word.
Spoken word.
It's just poetry if there aren't laughs. That's what I don't care. As long as it gets a laugh, then kudos for finding that laugh.
Hear, agreed. Even if it's the most horrible, dead baby, school shooting, pedophilia, AIDS, rape, cancer. If it's funny, it's funny. Because you always hear, oh, you can't do rape jokes. But I have a joke in my act where I get raped. Kills. Kills. So it's like, oh, so you're against rape jokes. But if I get raped, it's okay. Well, what about me?
You said that in our last interview we did on here, you had a quote when you had worked with Louis C.K., and he said to make your jokes personal. So instead of saying hangovers are like this, you go, I was hungover.
Wow, you remember it. Good memory.
I do remember that. Because that's like one of those gems. You're like, oh, yeah, just flip it onto yourself.
Always flip it, yeah. I had a joke years ago about how gay guys must be jealous of Jews because Jews want to reproduce and procreate and build more. And gay guys can't reproduce, but they still keep coming up. You know, and I talked to him, and he was like, talk about how you're not Jewish, and that'll be the way in. And once I did that, the whole joke started killing.
Oh,
it's a fun little nugget, but yeah. Personal, always personalize. But don't over-personalize. Don't just go, me, you know. Jump in with you, so they go, because otherwise they go, why is he talking about this? He's not Jewish, what is this about, huh? But then, once you get into it, then you can do the bit.
So you're almost the filter. Or the context for whatever you're trying to talk
about. Yes, exactly.
Ooh, that's gold.
That's good stuff.
That's gold.
You're the filter.
You have any other nuggets you've picked up over the years you could share with the Hot Breathiverse?
Oh, big nugget. Big nug. Well, I have noticed now people are so buzzwordy. Like if you just say my gay roommate, they go, uh-oh. You're like, it's my roommate, relax. But just that word gay makes people tense up just because that's the world we're living in now. Like HR is up our ass and you get fired for saying this or you lose your sitcom for tweeting that, whatever it is. So I've noticed now that I used to say that their asshole would pucker and I would just go, whoa, whoa, sorry, hold on. But now if I just lean in more, they're into it. So just go in all the way. You know, it's as if like a girl put her hand on your knee and you were like, and then you wanted her to keep going, but you didn't want to say anything, and then she put her hand on your junk, and you're like, all right.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Like, push a little. Give it a little push.
But with confidence.
Sure.
It's
almost
like believing. Don't. As soon as they got worried, you got worried, but it's like just press through that discomfort yourself.
Yes, yes.
Okay, confidence.
Well, confidence and just go, hey, these are just words. We're all going to die one day. Mm-hmm. This is a comedy club. I'm a comedian. Here's more joke. It's almost like Jeselnik. Jeselnik's great comic. He says some horrible things, but he's so over the top evil in his act. You know, he's got the smile and the hair and the face and the voice, and he's just like, oh, this is happening. And you kind of relax more because you're like, it is happening. We're at 100%. You know, it's so outlandish the darkness that he says that, like, it makes it okay again. Whereas if a guy's tiptoeing around it, it's like, oh, this guy seems shady and weird.
Do you find that that's how you can get an audience on your side? Like, I've been doing longer sets now, so I've been noticing, trying to, like, find that rhythm with the audience. And the first couple of minutes in a longer set, you're trying to figure them out, and all of a sudden there's that, like, aha moment where they just jump on your side.
Right.
Is that, and I saw you do this last night as well, where you were kind of just doing your jokes, getting some laughs, and all of a sudden you did a joke, and it just, like, broke it open.
Mm.
Does that come with just continuing to hit on your rhythm, continuing to hit on your pattern, and not trying to let the audience delegate what you do? Does that make sense?
I guess that is. I guess I just do the road so much that that's subconscious, where you got to talk about the city you're in, talk about the local stuff for 2 minutes, riff on a guy in the room. You got to just show you're in the room.
Uh-huh.
You got to show you know where you are a little bit. Because it's weird when those guys come out and go, hey, I was at the bank today. And you're like, whoa, no hello, no nothing. Like, we're just right in there. It's almost like anal sex. You got to ease. You got to ease it in. You can't just jam a fist in there. You got to put the lube on, maybe a makeout, a candle, then get in there. But, yeah, I think that's just something I learned, where you kind of got to grab the hand before you grab the vagina.
A lot of sexual references.
Yeah, I guess so.
So far.
Well, I mean, it's basically they see you, and they have to process. Give them a minute to process. You can't just go right in and go, oh, my wife's a twat or whatever. And they're like, what? Who? How'd we get here? Let them get to know you. Just a handshake.
Uh-huh.
But you know you have those jokes ready. And then you just, once you got them comfortable and sitting and know who you are, then throw that first killer out and you're off to the races.
I think I've noticed with your delivery is there's like a certain, like, pausing. And you almost, like, pause before a punchline or pause in between punchlines. Like,
sure.
That timing within. Is there some voodoo you're sprinkling in your material where you do have these kind of brief pauses that build the tension that make the joke work?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a pause is a huge advantage we have. You know, I feel like a pause is almost like a fuck.
Huh.
Where it accentuates the punchline a little more. I don't know, just any kind of tension you can build and then break is better. Obviously, you don't want to pause for a minute, but give it a one beat and then say it, and I feel like that always helps the punch.
So sometimes when you're developing material, the difference between it working or not can be if you just take a beat and then say it versus you just running
through
it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That can make a joke go from a 50% to a 70%, I think. Yeah, always got a pause is big.
It takes confidence, though.
I guess, but if you know the joke, if you know where the punchline is, you can hang in there for a beat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like that, like a guy winding up and then punching you. You know, you can do a bunch of little rabbit punches, jab, 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 but then you want that uppercut to really, you know. So yeah, I would always give a pause.
Okay, pause before the punchline.
I
children.
Mean, this is. 101 here.
That's what this whole show is.
Oh, is that what this is?
This whole
all right.
He forgot, y'all. He forgot
what
about us.
What is the show? This is like comedy tips?
Mastery. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You're a Hot Breath, your weekly guide to comedy mastery.
Gee, I don't know if I'm mastery. I masturbated earlier, but I don't know if I'm.
Is that what that smell was?
Yeah. I used cocoa butter, but I don't know about mastery. I'm just a road hack. Trying to pay the mortgage.
No, but I mean, we learn from every facet of it too. So, like, we had Craig Shoemaker on here.
Oh, the love doctor,
the love master,
master.
No, I'm sure he's both.
Yes.
He had a crazy, you know, he's a love master. He had a crazy groupie story of, like, there was some liquids involved. There was a lot of squirting on demand. And
whoa.
He said he had only, like, told it before once. He's like, I'll never tell it again after
whoa.
This. It was pretty gnarly. But you don't brand yourself as the love master, but you're a love master. Maybe you're the love doctor. Maybe that's what it is.
I never got my doctorate, but I definitely dabbled in the ways of the night. I really got after it. I mean, I was in a 12-year relationship, and then I just went ham on the gash.
Because that was your high school sweetheart, right?
Yes.
You had all that with, yeah.
Yeah, so after that, I mean, it was weird because it was like, right when Bumble and Tinder was popping. So like that was all out there to use. I had so many resources, and you know, I was working all these comedy clubs in New York City and all over the country. So like you could just land in Denver. Excuse me, a little semen. And you could just land in Denver and then just start scrolling and be like, oh, man, look at this. And then you're the guy at the comedy club, so you already look cool. You're like, hey, I'm performing here all weekend. They're like, oh, shit, I know he's not a serial killer. He's here. Oh. And, you know, it's better than just being like, hey, I'm a loser. Will you let me go down on you? You know, you have a thing where you're a comedian. So it was pretty. Also, I used to open for Amy Schumer, and that was like, you know, 10,000 screaming ladies, and they can't bang her. So I got the run off.
What was the most, maybe in one night?
Ah, jeez, I feel bad. This is going to get me in trouble. But I don't know. I had a three for a hat trick in New York.
Whoa.
Woke up at a girl's place, bang. Met a girl for lunch, bang. Met a girl that night, bang. But it's just, you know, those days are over now. I got a hot lady.
Oh, of course, yes.
But
of course.
Yeah, we had a good run. But it does wear. It wears off, you know, like. After a while, you're like, this is a lot of work. My whole life was, you know, juggling and texting and trying to be funny with this one and be charming with that one and then put out a fire over here and all that. And it was, it's a lot of messaging.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Even just going in somewhere, then you hit, did you have a system for like, did you end up having like go-to women every time you hit a certain city?
Yeah.
You had like a roster?
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun. And the ladies, they're having a good time as well. You know, this wasn't all just, you know, macho bullshit. This is like, hey, you're having fun. I don't slut shame. I hope you don't slut shame. And let's be grown-ups here and have a good time genitalia-wise.
So Craig had his story of like this. She was like a playmate or whatever with her friend, and one could like squirt on demand, and the other one could like queef on demand.
Wow!
So what
is a comedy duo?
Well, you know, the Love Master.
I guess so. Yeah,
he's got it. So what story does the Love Doctor have? Of
oh, geez,
a tale of the tape.
Well, I did a show once in Florida. This is years ago, and I got an Uber ride home. And Uber was, you know, it's like this milfy kind of 40-year-old lady. And she was like, oh, were you just on? I was like, yeah, I was performing. She was like, I wanted to go to the show, but I couldn't. And I said, well, here, come tomorrow. I got her some tickets. Ended up banging the Uber driver. She just got divorced. And I said, I'm staying. She knew where I was staying because she dropped me off. And I said, when you get off, come by and I'll get you off. And
did you say that?
Something like that. Yeah.
Nice.
Some horrible line. I was in the car with a bunch of other comics. So I was like, doing it in front of them, which was weird. But then we got to the hotel. I told her what room I was in, and like 4 hours later, I was laying in bed. I'd taken a sleeping pill, which is always a bummer. And then I heard a knock, and that was it. So I had to fight through the pill and go at it.
How'd it go?
It was great.
Victory?
It was great. Victory, very Florida. A lot of crazy tats, a lot of anal stuff. You name it. Took a shower. It was wild.
Jeez.
Uber, baby.
It's the untapped dating app, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of Middle Eastern men, but if you can find a blonde Florida mom, I say go for it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a fun night.
You're an inspiration to us all, Mark.
I guess I got a free ride after all. All right, 5 stars.
5 stars. There's
there
the tag. I was waiting on the 5-star tag.
It's an easy joke.
Well, we won't. I know I don't want your lady to hear all this.
It's a little late now.
Yeah, so we'll pivot a little bit because we can't. Comedy is also a mistress, if you will.
Ooh, I like it.
Segway, we call that in the biz. That's
yes.
A Segway, kids.
Also a little vehicle.
And when we're thinking of comedy being the devilish mistress she is, I know you had the Comedy Central special came out.
Yes.
But you wanted it to be, you pitched it to Netflix first, or Netflix said no.
Yes.
So what was, comedians, we're seeing a comedian like every day get on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
What is even the process? Do you go to Mount Netflix and you're like, here is something I taped? Like, what is that whole process to even approach them, and what are they looking for? What happened?
Basically, I think you got to just film something. Now, it's all different now. Before, you could just send them a tape of like, here's 20 minutes of my hour. It's killing. I think this could be something. Or I shot an hour on HD, 4K. Here you go. Tell me what you think if you want to buy it. And now they're so closed off now because they realize they're the biggest. They realize they've got all the exposure.
Yeah.
Everybody wants, you know, it's like Ellen, Seinfeld, Chappelle, Rock. Like, they all go Netflix. So they know they have that power. And now they don't want to take a shot on some young guy. Like, before, Segura was kind of like, oh, we'll take you, whatever. Oh, Tony Hinchcliffe, Ali Wong, whatever. And they just accepted those. And then, boom, they blew up. But now there's so many comics that I don't think they want to just take everything. Like, I know some guys, I'm not going to say their names, but killer comics. Netflix won't even answer their emails and everything. And I'm like, now they just put it on YouTube and they're killing. And I'm like, see, Netflix, you could have had that. Like, comedy's all about the up-and-coming, hungry new guy or girl. It's not about Ellen. I get it. Ellen will bring tickets in and Sandler has a special, so yeah, they'll bring views. But, like, I don't know. You got a book, because the guys on the road are the ones who are good. They're the ones, like, in the pocket, top of their game, just slugging it out at a funny bone every weekend. You know, you get a, yeah, what's his fucking name? Like Seinfeld. I get it. He's a legend and a draw and all that, but, like, I don't know, those specials are weird. It's like, let me show you my old act and all that. I'm like, what? There's a million guys murdering it with new shit, killing, original, and they can't get a break because Netflix went too big. They went too big. It's got to be like Howie Mandel's coming out with one. It's like,
yeah,
Ray Romano. You got to be like this legendary status, which I get. It gives them a good brand. Like, look at us. We have the elite on here,
yeah,
which I get, but put the new guys on as well, but I don't know. But
from a business perspective, I mean, it makes sense that if Ray Romano's going to be like, hey, I'll do a special on your network, it's like, okay, who are we going to pick?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
totally, of course. And I get that. But Ray Romano, you got to pay $20 million. Give me $200,000. I'm in, baby.
Boom.
And it'll help my career. And also, I'm in this for the long haul. Like, I'm 35. I'll be doing this in 30 years. You know, I'm still going to go. But I get it. But here's the beauty of Netflix turning down everybody. It's caused all these young, great comics to do their own thing, go online, start a podcast, start a web series. The more rejection you get, ironically, makes you stronger and more versatile and creative. You get outside the box and you start putting out your own shit. And thank God for YouTube. I mean, they say YouTube is going to be the next thing when Netflix goes away.
That's what I've been fascinated with, what Andrew Schulz is doing.
That's one guy I was talking about.
Yeah, when he was on here and we were talking about, like, how he shopped his special everywhere.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted it.
And he's funny. He's got good stuff. It's edgy as hell.
Yeah.
It's topical, but he's, you know, also it's the whole, like, you're another white guy thing, which nobody likes when you bring that up. But, like, there's a million white guys, and you kind of blend together after a while, so... Yeah, so, like, a lot of white guys are getting creative. And I get it. I'm all about diversifying and all that. But, like, don't just put up a guy because he's trans or whatever. To me, that feels weird. Like, there's funny trans comics. Put them on.
Mm.
Don't just put them on because. I feel like that's offensive in a weird
way. They're just wanting to check a box.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And I get it. They're trying to cover their ass. But, like, let's keep the quality up. There's a ton of funny minorities, you know?
Yeah.
You don't need to put on a bad one.
So did you film your special yourself, and then you pitched it to Netflix?
No, I just... you're talking about the Comedy Central one?
Yes.
No, they said no, so Amy Schumer said, hey, I'll produce it, and Comedy Central was like, we'll take that. They wouldn't take it, it was just me.
Did you pitch them to see if they
Yeah, they were like, ah, sorry, we like you, but sorry, and I was like, okay, and then Schumer's like, I'll put my name on it, and they're like... We'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the business, you know.
So you didn't even have one filmed yet.
No.
You went to Netflix like, hey, I have an hour, but
yes.
it wasn't filmed or anything yet.
No, nothing.
Because I've heard of comics doing it all themselves, and then they like present it to Netflix. And
I've
Netflix
heard that
just
too.
Buys it up.
But I had that was like 2016. I had no money. I couldn't afford to, because those are like 30-40 grand to shoot that.
I was wondering
that.
How much those kind of productions usually cost.
It's not cheap. You got to rent the place. You got to rent the equipment. You got to get a guy to edit it, a color corrector, all that shit. And it just keeps going up and up. And You know, they'll be like, it'll be 50 grand. And by the end of it, it's 72 grand. You're like, God damn. And then you get 100 grand back. So you're like, all right, I made 20 grand, I guess. But then the agents take 10%. So,
boom.
But to me, like, that's why I might just go Schultz's route and go YouTube, because I just want people to see it. I just want people to come out and buy tickets. I don't need to be fucking Sebastian Maniscalco. That's not my goal. I mean, he's on another planet. I just want to be a comic that people care about.
So you just need, when it comes to YouTube, I guess you're not making money when you put it on YouTube immediately, but the money comes on the road. Is that what you mean? So you put it out for free with the hopes of returned with ticket sales.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because once you start selling out, there's so many pronged effects that help your career, and I'm geeking out here. This is some real comedy
this
shit.
This is the game, but we are in it all the way, I promise.
See, that's where my brain goes. You're fucking up. You're blowing it. But I'm
gay,
doing the show.
That one too, yeah.
Yeah.
No, dude, this is perfect. All this is what we need.
So, A, you get your shit out there. So now people go, okay, you're this kind of guy. Because I do a lot of late night sets. Mm-hmm. And late night sets are squeaky clean. They alter your material. They say, can you change hobo to, you know, urban camper or whatever the fuck it is. You're like, all right, this is not really me anymore, but fuck it, I'd like to get on television and get some views. So that's a whole thing, but with your hour, you want it to be edgy, you want to say whatever you want, you want it to be completely you, and I feel like some places kind of take that away, but where YouTube won't. They'll just go, yeah, do whatever you want. So now you get people coming to see you, and they know you. It's not one of those things where they see you on Comedy Central being squeaky clean, then they come out and see it, they're like, whoa, that was a lot of jokes on pedophilia. And you're like, well, this is who I am. I'm a pedophile. No. But so you get the people who you want to come see you, and now you got your own audience that knows you, so you can be weirder. You can try more. You can get creative. Instead of just having, like, set up punch, that will work in any room, you can kind of be more you and branch out and figure out who you are more. Because they know you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You like, go watch old Bill Burr. You watch old Bill Burr. He's like, how you doing, folks? Good to be here. He's wearing a suit. He looks weird. His name was Billy. Now you watch Burr, and he's like, what the fuck is up with this shit? And he's talking about everything he wants to talk about, which he couldn't have done before. You need your crowd to do that. So that's one good thing about just putting it out there and having people come see it.
Yeah, and that's really these problems almost create progress, like you were saying, in terms of, here's a roadblock. Oh, we'll just find another route.
Yeah.
And it's the more unique and authentic route.
And isn't it terrifying thinking about, like, the early 90s when a guy, like a killer act, they were probably just out there in obscurity, killing, and nobody knew about them. And then, you know, on TV, they show you fucking Elaine Boozler and Dennis Wolfberg, and you're like, yeah, these are funny, but, like, what if there's some murderer out there that we never know about because these gatekeepers just won't let them in?
Mm-hmm. Now that is the value of the internet, is you can create it yourself.
Exactly, yeah, and that's what people are doing, and, boy, it's changed. I mean, look at Joe Rogan's podcast. It's, like, zillions of hits views, and, like, that's just on YouTube. Like, if he went to Netflix, who knows? 5 years ago, whenever he started, they would have been like, we're just going to play you on a mic? What? Like, we're not going to buy that. He'd be like, okay, and then put it on YouTube, 8 million, 10 million views. It's crazy.
Yeah, because even thinking of the internet versus television or YouTube versus, like, the old tube, is like, did your Comedy Central special even get traction? Like,
no. Nobody saw it.
It was almost like people saw your late night sets more than, like, your special.
Well, you know, there's a couple reasons. Again, I should tell you, I ate an edible like 3 nights ago, and I'm just sober now. So you're like the first person I've talked to sober. I did the set last night. I was still a little loopy.
I can't mess with that stuff, man. It's
the worst. The worst. Don't ever do it, kids. Edibles.
It's really not worth it.
Not worth it. I'm just counting the minutes to when it's over. I'm just shaking. It was brutal. So what was the question?
So we're getting a fresh Normand right here.
Yeah, this is that's why I'm talking so well. I got a lot to get out.
No, that's great. No, we were just talking about your Comedy Central special not getting traction.
Oh, yeah. Nobody saw it. I put these clips online now on Instagram. Those get way more hits than Comedy Central because you can share it. They're small. They're like a minute long. And that's the key now, man. Like, TV, I hate to say it, but it's, you know, it comes on once. If you miss it, it's over. Whereas online just lives forever, and, like, sometimes people will see one video, and they're like, oh, I like that. Then they'll go check the next three down, like, what else has he done? And they're scrolling through, and I'm getting views on videos from, like, 2 years ago and stuff. So the internet's the way to go, because That Comedy Central, nobody saw that. Also, Schultz had a good point where he thinks people don't want to watch an hour. You know, everybody puts out their big hour, their big special, but nobody can get through a full hour. Yeah. So his thing is he puts short clips on YouTube and they'll watch one after another, which will actually spend 2 hours doing, but they like to be able to control it.
And he broke his special up too into like 15. He did like 15 minutes at the Cellar. Mm-hmm. Like what Ray Romano did pretty much after Schultz released his.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he's took the idea or not, but Schultz, he like did a 15 minute set at the Cellar, then moved on to the next and kind of broke up his special to make it more like a documentary,
right,
than
right.
like an actual special.
Yeah, I remember that.
Do you think that that's for like let's say for me, for instance,
okay,
if I was wanting to shoot a special, would you say, based on your experience and the knowledge you have in the industry, would it be more savvy to do like an unorthodox format as opposed to me just coming out, here I am for an hour?
I would go unorthodox all the way. As an unknown guy, just go break through with something weird and different. Because you put out an hour, people are going to go, who's this? I don't know. What else you got? Oh, Brian Regan. All right. You gotta stand out a little bit. I think shake it up. Also, Schultz admits, he's like, I took this all from music. That's what they do. That's how they promote singles. You know, so he's doing a single bit. And I think it's all very smart. He's a hell of a marketer, that guy.
Yeah, very savvy.
Yeah, so I don't have an ounce of that shit. So I'm trying to learn it because this is part of the business now.
So would you almost think for your special you'll do something more unorthodox?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I did an album last week. It went great. Everything worked. I filmed it on 4K with two different angles just to have it.
Oh.
Because you never know. But again, it's me in a club. It's not like a big theater. I'm wearing a T-shirt. You know, it's a brick wall. So who knows if anyone will buy it, but I might just put it up on YouTube. Fuck it.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can get some money from it, or like maybe I'll show it to HBO. Like, will you buy this, or will you let me do this hour?
Mm-hmm.
And whatever, I don't know. But probably no one will want it. But I think maybe I'll just put it on YouTube.
But if somebody does buy it, like let's say a Comedy Central... When we're talking about the business of like a special, do you just get an upfront payment, or do you get upfront and then you may get a cut if it gets a lot of traction as well?
You get an upfront.
It's all upfront.
Especially Comedy Central, they're very, I don't want to say they're strapped, but they're like, we don't have money, just give.
Gotcha.
So they'll put it up once and maybe put a couple clips on YouTube, maybe, and that's it.
Yeah,
it's very strange.
I don't get it either.
I don't get it.
Don't
you want people to see this as well? You pay for it. Put it out there.
Right.
But hey, they got Workaholics reruns to play, you know? Because that's really what people watch. Like, you know, I heard on Netflix, the two most watched shows are The Office and Friends.
Really?
And they cost like $1 zillion a year to keep the rights to it. But that just keeps people on Netflix. You know, that they watch hours. My girl, she sleeps to The Office. She puts it on, just goes to bed. It's part of our, you know, the American culture now, where it's like in the zeitgeist. Just that, I'll be there for you. You know, you're just like, you feel familiar, and you go to bed and kill
yourself.
Yes.
You go to bed and kill yourself.
I think it's just a way to shut down now, that familiarity.
Okay.
That's why everything on TV now is like, we're remaking Jumanji, we're remaking Ghostbusters, we're remaking Starsky and Hutch, whatever the hell it is. It's like, we're so up our own asses that we have to have something that we've heard of before.
So maybe the unorthodox special is looking at old specials, and maybe just almost kind of
reinventing.
Maybe reinventing in a way. Or making it a derivative, not stealing. It's a derivative,
right,
as they say in the art world.
It's not a bad idea, though.
Maybe, hey, please.
Yeah, I like it. Like a vintage kind of thing.
Yeah, just see what... Because kind of like how Andrew was saying, you know, he adapted from music, kind of their format. Maybe just, and instead of us trying to figure out what's next, it's like, well, what happened? And see if we can just bring that to be next.
Sure.
It's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
Just see what's out there.
But now you're just recreating again. Now you're just making another remake.
Yeah.
I guess. But it's
different.
It's a remix, but who knows?
I don't know. I mean, someone's going to be like, oh, I'll do that. But then you still got to do the work. That's what
right.
I mean, that's what I love about this show is like, sometimes people are like, well, I don't want to give away too much. I was like, people still have to do the
work. Yeah.
Like,
nobody's doing anything.
The idea is the easy part.
Right. I mean, how many friends do you have go, hey, I'm going to write a screenplay? And you're like, great, go do it. And then 2 years later, you're like, what happened? They're like, things came up. You're like, just don't tell me anything you're going to do unless you're doing it.
Exactly.
That's the new rule.
I don't even get excited about anything until after it's done.
Right.
So, like, one of my goals this year is to shoot a special. So I feel like if I say it out loud, that's going to hold me accountable. Mm-hmm. If I keep saying it on the record.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Because one, you know, the special that you can then break up into content, like you said, and get exposure that way. But also, I've heard, like, the spins from, like, satellite radio.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Those
get,
are big.
Like, money.
Good money.
That.
The prices actually went up for spins.
Really?
So, yeah, it's a viable source of income. I know a lot of guys, especially clean material. Are you clean?
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Just record a half hour and send it to them.
Oh, yeah?
They'll play the shit out of it because no one's clean now. So, like, they have all these people listening to clean stations on Sirius, and it's, like, the same eight guys. It's, like, Nate Bargatze, it's Jim Gaffigan, it's Brian Regan, over and over again. So if you get in there, you're
really?
Set because they'll play the shit out of it.
Oh.
Yeah, this is some real inside jizz here, folks.
I love anytime you almost get to a sentimentality, you have to flip it.
I got
to
flip.
Your comedian brain just has to be like, well, not quite.
No, I don't want to feel anything. Come on.
Okay, so you can just record the, I guess you don't even need video. It's just you can send an audio version of us. If I did like a feature set, I could just send that in.
Send it in.
Interesting.
I mean, at least a half hour you want to give them.
Oh, but I mean, okay. And you want to be quality. You want to be your best version.
Sure,
you don't
sure.
want it to be like some half-baked joke that you throw out there.
But Sirius is so cool because somebody will hear that in fucking Portland and be like, hey, you're really funny. I showed my friends. Do you have an album? Do you have a YouTube? Do you have whatever? And then you start getting a little buzz going.
Yes. Yeah.
Somebody in Britain might hear it, or Scotland or whatever.
That's what I've noticed with this podcast is we almost have like, there's almost like hot breath hubs a little bit. And like Montreal, we have like a nice little core listenership. England, we have.
Ah.
Is it called England? I don't even know what to call it.
I believe it is England.
Great Britain's the old name.
Yeah.
Is
well, it's a little
something.
It's a little pretentious.
I don't know. I went liberal arts. I don't know.
Yeah,
history.
England.
Yeah. England.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then Ireland, there's a few. Like, it's amazing with the internet, like how you can connect with people.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure because you not only have created a bunch of comedy content, but even like the podcast, like it's, you have your nice own ecosystem. Have you seen that to be driving ticket sales?
Yeah, for sure. Cause, I'm nowhere near a big draw, but like I got a podcast, people are enjoying it. So I'll get like 10 to 15 fans at every show now, which is great because you already get the walk-up traffic. You get the "we need something to do tonight" traffic, and then you fill that in with your people. They fill in those little pockets. So now you got a sellout with some of your fans, and your fans are dying, and they're going crazy. So then the other people go, "Maybe we should go crazy," and it like infects the whole crowd in a good way.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine if I had like a full room of fans. That would be very exciting. Like when you open for like a Kreischer or a Rogan or a Segura or whatever, these people have their own peep that every single seat is a fan who knows them and loves them. I would get nothing done because you could just come out and go, hey, I'm a douche. And they'd be like, you are, yeah, you know.
Isn't that why Steve Martin quit?
I guess it is, yeah.
It was just like layups at some point.
Right.
Like, it's just too crazy.
Yeah, I remember, here's a fun story. When I opened for Louis years ago, he would always be like, man, I would kill to be where you are, like just running around Brooklyn, earning laughs, because he gets a lot of laughs based on being Louis, you know? So he's like, I would kill to get that genuine response again, just to know if it's actually funny. Kill to be where you are. Cut to 2 years later, he gets popped, and I text him. I was like, hey, welcome back to my level, and he never wrote back. So I think I went too far there, but it was still raw. I should have given it like a month.
But now, okay, see, now the comedian in me wanting to worry about networking may not try to push that envelope. I may like not want to do that thinking of, well, I don't want to ruffle any feathers. But in your career, do you just, you're just like, whatever, this is
what
I'm thinking.
You don't want to do what?
So it's like, if I had opened for Louis before,
okay,
and he just had this event come out,
yes,
where he got popped, like you said, and then I don't know if I would want to text him, hey, and back down with me.
Oh,
almost
yeah.
as if like, well, then maybe I won't be able to open for him again, or maybe he'll resent me, or like,
well,
is that just all just a delusion that comedians should not worry about?
I think you're smarter than me, because I didn't even think about that. I was like, this will be funny.
A joke, right?
I was just doing a joke, and he's a comic, and we know each other, so I thought, oh, it'll be fun, but I think it was such a devastating blow that I think it was like, all right, I don't have time for this shit right now. So, but also, I can't tell you how many countless times that's hurt me, just saying, here's a joke I haven't thought about yet or haven't thought about the consequences, and I just say it, and sometimes it helps, and a lot of times it hurts. So keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, okay.
Don't just say shit, because I got beat up, and I've gotten fired and all that, so like, yeah, you got to watch what you say. But I am missing that little guy on the shoulder going, I wouldn't do that one.
Okay. Well, it's just as comedians listening to this, and like even me, we like look at someone like you and they're like, oh yeah, he did it, he's done it. Like,
I've done, but I was a lot of fuck ups over the along the way.
But so it's almost just you being funny almost kind of will sweep those under the rug eventually. Is that
funny? Oh. is should be number one. It's like ninth on the list now of why people get big. But I think at the end of the day, if you really look back, funny is what wins. There's a zillion comics I started with who were like had a lot of heat, and they were blowing up, and they were getting stuff, and they just never wrote and kind of fluffed off, and now they're gone. And I've only been doing it 12-ish years. So imagine a 20-year career. You see a lot of people come and go.
Yeah, or you think like Bert Kreischer, it took him like 20 years to hit.
Yeah.
And that was the internet, you know, Facebook.
And now he's huge.
He put that clip on Facebook, and then boom.
I know, and he'd been doing it forever, and he's had like 4 shows, like... People don't realize what you got to do just to get. Tosh once said, you'll never realize how famous you aren't, you know, because there's always somebody who doesn't know you. Uh-huh. You know, like he's on a sitcom, he does arenas, he's got huge specials, and there's some people like, who? Daniel Tosh? And you're like, yeah, that's how it goes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, your mom doesn't know who Bill Burr is, does she?
I don't know what she knows.
Well, she's a little kooky, but yeah.
Did you have sex with her, too? Is that what?
Your mom? Possibly.
I just figured you've probably had awkward run-ins like that before.
Oh, yeah. Many weird run-ins. But yeah, you know, comics. I forget, you know, I act like this is the center of the universe, but it's just like a niche art form that three people care about.
Yeah, it is. But as comedians, it's everything.
It's everything.
Yeah.
But we're basically like in a punk band pontificating on like, did you see Rat Dick? What a band. Oh, they were pure. They had integrity. And, you know, these other guys are, you know, sucking the man's dick. They're corporate now. And you're like, nobody gives a fuck about it. We got problems. We got kids. We got a hobby.
Yeah.
But that's what I do with comedy. And I got to realize, hey, this is just like this weird subset of entertainment that nobody gives a shit about.
So as comedians coming up, what are some tips you can have as we land this plane here?
Because
this is, you know, it's all about just comedy and the comedy game. And what are some tips you can maybe share with comics?
Ooh, some big tips. All right. Yeah. Cut down on the booze. Don't go too hard. I was, here's the problem with booze. Do you drink?
Not really.
Good. Good for you. But just. I love it so much, and I want to party, and I want to get drunk, but it kills your whole next day.
Yeah.
And I have bad anxiety, so when I'm hungover, my anxiety goes through the roof, and I'm like, you suck. You're going to bomb. This joke isn't good. And you're trying to write, and you're like, it all stinks. Have you ever written a joke in your life? You kill yourself. You suck. You're gay. So all that shit.
There it is again.
And all that comes out, and I already have enough of that sober. So when I'm drinking, it's even worse. But so cut back on the booze. Just write. Even when you got nothing in your head, just go back to old tweets, look at old jokes, try something on stage. If you're doing a new bit and you're kind of not doing well with it, just throw in 3 more sentences real quick. Like, what else? Always stretch as much as you can. Don't go out and bomb a ton, but like, well, last night I went on stage and I was like, I'm going to riff about Atlanta a little bit. Maybe nothing will come. Maybe it'll be humiliating, but it's not the end of the world. So even when you're like, all right, pull out, do 3 more sentences. Just say, fuck it. It's almost like when you're doing reps and you're on that last one and you can't do it, but you want to give up. And your friend goes, just push it a little bit. Even if you just get it up to here instead of not doing it, just that will give you some muscle, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with comedy. Just push it a little further. Just stretch it as much as you can until you feel them like, all right, we got it. And if you do that enough, over years, you'll become amazing because you A, you're building something. B, you're learning what it feels like to be frazzled and push that down. You know that feeling of panic when you're on stage? You're like, this is bombing, abort.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going and push your abort button further away, you know? So you can build that callus of like, I can take a little bit of bombing. I can take it because I'm such a wuss. Like people go, oh, you got so many punchlines. I'm like, yeah, I'm scared of silence. I'm not this brilliant writer guy. I'm punching it up so I don't have to feel anything. Oh. So like, yeah, always push it a little further. Try to riff. Do that joke that you're scared of doing. Sometimes when I'm on stage, I'm like a little nervous, out of my element. I'm like, this isn't going as well as I hoped. That's when you try the new bit. Because that's when you're the most vulnerable and raw. And it'll actually kick you into being yourself. It's almost like when you're with a girl and you're trying to be cool and funny and it's not going that great. Just go, well, this isn't going that great. Hold on. Let me reboot here. It's the thing your brain is telling you don't do. Do that sometimes. Go towards that shit. It's like the Del Close thing. Follow the fear. Mm-hmm. Go towards the fear sometimes. And everything in your brain is saying don't, but that's when you should. And it makes the fear go away, ironically. Go into it. Lean into the skid. It's like that Bill Burr thing. He's like, when you're doing stand-up, if you're bad at going to crowd work, go to crowd work. Because you got to learn it. And the only way to learn is to dive in. It's like basketball players. I can't go left. Well, then work on going left. Same thing. So this is all, you know, heavy inside baseball anal, but just, you know, try it. Try it. Write down the, you know, you got that weird joke. You're like, this is weird. Try it. What's gonna happen? This is all, that's the cool thing about stand-up. It's all batting practice until TV or the special. Obviously, you don't want to use the audience too much and just be like, you guys are my canvas. I'm going to take a shit on you. And whatever works, I'll keep it because then you'll be a bad comic. Mm. So walk that line of being a pro, killing, giving them a good show, and working out your shit and trying shit, and that's a good line. And I think some people respect it. They want to hear the new shit. They want to hear you working it out. So, yeah, that's my tidbit.
This is tidbit. Good stuff, man.
Hey, thanks. I feel like I'm finally coming out of this edible.
When I asked about comedy tips, you came to life.
Wow. This is all I have.
No, but it's fun. Like, we can just talk about comedy as if it's our first day still.
Yes.
It's that fresh. You know?
Ah, I love it. It's a special thing, and people are trying to ruin it, and it sucks. But push on through, baby.
Push on through, baby.
Be yourself and, you know, go gay.
Go. I knew there was something right around the corner there.
There you go.
He's running out. Well, Hot Breathiverse, that's going to be it for us. Thank you guys for hanging out. If you did enjoy this, please, all we ask here, just share it. Just let another comic know, up in conversation on an open mic or you're out at a club. Just tell other comics about it. Share a clip on Facebook. Whatever you got to do just to spread the comedy mastery we're doing here at Hot Breath. We have Mark Normand.
Hey, hey.
One of the masters of this craft. Learning, masters in practice.
There you go.
Only 12 practice. Years in and the success he's already found. It's only going to grow exponentially from here. So just push towards the fear.
Yeah, there you go. Which I should take my own advice sometimes.
And push that internet button that says subscribe.
Mm.
And also really our website. Go to hotbreathpodcast.com. That's where you're going to get our blog and all other sorts of fun info on there. But all that being said, Mark Normand, thanks for being on Hot Breath.
Hey, thanks for having me, and praise Allah.
There he is. All right.
Let's eat.
All right.
Amen.
Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.